Hi everyone, welcome to TimingResearch.com's Crowd Forecast News, episode number 222 for April 29th, 2019. If you have not had a chance to take a look at today's report yet, we are going to be talking about report number 292, and I will have that up on my screen in a moment here. So you will be able to see that. If you'd like to download it for yourself, go to timingresearch.com/reports, and you can get either the PDF or the web version there. We are broadcasting live on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, but you can also listen to the audio-only podcast version of all episodes on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Search for Timing Research and subscribe. My name is David Kosmeter. I'm the creator of Timing Research, and today I have arranged for first-time guest Jake Bernstein to join us, as well as Mark Sachs and Jim Kenny to moderate. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Jim.
Sure. Okay. Welcome, everybody, and good to have Jake and Mark with us today. We're going to start out by going over a couple of the questions that are out there in the crowd forecast news report and get the input from Jake and Mark on what they think. So to start out, we're going to go in order of Mark first and Jake second, if that's okay with you guys.
Sure.
And the first question is which direction do you think the S&P 500 index will move from the opening today until Friday's close?
Hey, Jim, if you guys want to do a quick introduction about yourself.
I'm sorry. Yeah. First, Mark, a quick introduction on who you are and what you do and that kind of thing.
Sure. I'm Mark Sachs from Rightline Trading. And essentially, our company and our software is geared to look at the multi-time frame assessment of a number of different variables. Including momentum, order flow. We look at money flow via the use of correlative markets. We look for the multi-time frame alignment and trend of different markets. And I'm going to be showing you some charts of the E-mini and sort of jumping ahead just by telling you that I think I'm very bullish on the E-mini. I'll show you why in a little bit.
Okay, that sounds great, Mark. Jake, a quick background on yourself and, of course, what you do at your firm.
Sure, absolutely. I've been trading since 1967. I'm a real trader. I trade practically every day, not specifically a day trader, but short term. I use patterns and probabilities, no fundamentals whatsoever. We look at momentum and trends. We look at repetitive patterns with high probability, a lot of seasonal work. I've written 48 books on trading, been on Wall Street Week, CBS, CNBC, CNN, FNN, you name it. And our work is very specifically focused on objective indicators, no opinions, strictly facts and probabilities. So that's what I do.
That's great. Yeah, I think we're very fortunate today, everybody who's attending, because you've got one gentleman who is very much interested in momentum, which is very important, and another gentleman who works with patterns, which is obviously equally important. So those are two very big factors to succeed in investing, and two guys here are interested in both of them. Okay, so now we're going to hit the questions here. Which direction do you think, Mark, the S&P 500 will be going from today's opening until Friday's close? What do you think? And then, yeah.
Sure, I'm going to share. Can you see my screen? Okay.
Yep.
This is a longer term assessment of that our software is giving, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about what each of these lines mean. This is our Laguerre oscillator, which gives us a really nice assessment of momentum. We also look at the Laguerre on a multi time frame basis. As I mentioned, we look at order flow. Which I think is very important. And we look at correlative markets. And what you can see the E-mini doing is simply, as far as patterns is concerned, is simply making a series of higher lows and higher highs. And the one thing that I did not mention is that it's doing it with tremendous market breadth. I was looking at market breadth a couple of days ago and saw that there hasn't been such global participation by almost all stocks in the market in this rally. It hasn't been repeated. I think you have to go back maybe 20 years or so to get a similar market breadth associated with a move like this. And even though the market seems overbought in this kind of situation, you know, one of the things I don't believe in is trying to call a top or trying to call a bottom. As long as I see this bullish formation You can see it right on the right edge. Green means we've got a multi-time frame alignment of the E-mini to the upside. The right edge, the bar is green. That shows money flow. That second line and third line are both momentum. We've got everything aligned to the upside for a continued move up. So I believe this week we're going to see a move upwards. I would be bullish this week on the market, and I'd say with about 75% probability for that.
All right. Well, we'll get into the probability in a second. Jake, what are you seeing as far as between now and the end of the week?
The normal pattern at this time of the year is bullish. That's been going on since the 1920s. We just ended
April, what? You mean April, right?
April, right.
Right.
And that goes on into early May. Mm-hmm. So we have to go with what's normal, but normal not necessarily mean predictable. So if the probability of a trade is 70% or higher for me, I'm interested in that trade. If it's not 70% or higher, it doesn't even show up on my search. So what I do, and let me share my screen. I'll show you. Hold on 1 second. Can you see my screen now?
Not yet.
How about now?
Yeah, there's a thing. There's a word that says share screen, and you have to click on it, which is over whatever you're trying to show.
Hold on. Let me try that again. I just did that. Let me try it again.
There you go.
Okay, what do you see?
That's Mark.
All right. How about now?
Are you clicking on the green screen share button?
I am, but let me try it again. I've never used this particular platform. Hold on, please. Okay, I'm going to the green button. It's not happy. Just a second.
David, if Mark is still sharing his screen, should he stop sharing his screen so that Jake's might get on there?
No, that's not relevant.
Okay, how about this?
Okay, that's great. That's working.
You see a bunch of numbers?
Yeah,
there you go.
Okay, so what I did was I went to one of my research programs and I asked the question, show me high probability trades, S&P long or short, starting in late April, early May. You can see what I get. I get the entry date, the exit date, percentage win, stop and target. So right now we're looking at 70% odds and the trade that's coming up is in early May. So my answer to the question is higher with 70% probability.
Well, that's pretty sharp. It looks like both of you guys obviously are going with the tape, and the tape is pointing higher, and that's the way it looks. Probability, Mark, you said something in the high 70s, something like that?
Yeah, I said 70 to 75%, and okay. I also want to also agree. We have somebody who also trades seasonal patterns, and that April is a strong up month for the S&P, and right. And that also adds to my overall assessment.
Okay, and Jake, your probability was above 75 or around 70 or
between 70 and 75%, but
yeah,
and all we do, we may have a pattern, but that pattern has to trigger. So there's right. a 3-step process: the setup, the trigger, and the follow through. Right now, that pattern has not triggered yet. The one thing that I would add to the equation is this. We do a sentiment survey, which we've done every day since 1987. Small trader sentiment. Right now, the small trader is 88% bullish. That's a very scary number, so be careful.
Right, right. With regards to, I'm just going to throw a couple of questions out here. We all know that the market's been going higher. You don't need to be a genius to figure that one out. And we also know that this month of April is very good seasonally, okay? But April will be shutting down this week. Now, what might be helpful to people is I'm going to ask each one of you, starting out with Mark. Mark, is there a target price of which you feel the market may reach but have a difficult time exceeding? Like, how much more room on the upside do you foresee? Using the S&P as the gauge.
Okay, honestly, that's something for a lot of mathematical reasons. I don't ever make an assessment of a top or a bottom. For me, I believe it's all a matter of institutional money pressing right. the S&P to the upside.
Right.
And as long as they keep buying, as long as market breadth stays as bullish as it is. Market breadth obviously is a direct reflector of sentiment. I just don't think that we can call a top or a bottom. And
in other words, your methodology is more about following what's going on and thinking it's going to continue, as opposed to trying to do some type of mathematical formulation to figure out what a extended price may be in the short run.
Correct. Correct. I mean, if you look at, for instance, at an oscillator, it can be overbought for weeks or months.
Yes, it can.
And You know, I think if I could just, I just want to expand on that really briefly. You know, back in the 60s, when the oscillators and a lot of these indicators were developed, there was really no institutional money in the market. The market was driven by small commercial traders. And essentially, the power of every buyer was equal to the power of every seller. So the oscillator carried tremendous weight because when it became overbought and everybody in the market had equal throw weight, there was a good chance that you're going to look at a market reversal. Now, when in a lot of markets like the E-mini, you know, 75% or more of volume is institutional, is generated by the big institutions, they're going to determine the top. And, you know, if you hit an area of resistance, they're going to go right through it as long as they still look to buy. As long as money flow is positive, momentum is positive, market breadth is positive, all these things are positive. I don't really believe you can call a top or a bottom.
Yeah, no, that's obviously that's a difficult thing to do. With regards to Jake, do you have any type of situation where you think there could be a range that'll go up into, and when it hits that range, there could be a little bit of a termination to the short run here?
I think Mark's answer was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I've made my biggest mistakes in trying to predict tops.
Right.
What I need to do is this. I think of it in terms of getting out of danger, which is my first profit target that gets me out of danger. I have no further risk. And then I think the rest is gravy. So instead of trying to predict the top, I trail the stop. Let me show you something again. Let me share my screen because I can give you a projected top. Hold on a second. Let me go back to the screen sharing for feature. I'll get the hang of this one day, guys. Just hang in there. So let me try this again. Share screen. And do you see my screen?
No, it's not showing yet.
Okay. Let me try it again. Come in.
No, that's my software. That's bothering me. I can close it out.
It's giving you a buy trigger. Okay, here we go. Hold on, please. Share screens and application window.
I'm going to click out of the chart, so it'll stop.
Here you go. What about now?
Are you hitting that share button at the bottom?
Yes, I am.
That's not working for some reason.
Let me try it again.
There's something. Nope. Yep.
See it? Tell me what you see.
That's Mark's. We're still not sharing.
If we ever do this again, I'll get it right. Just hang on a second. Okie doke. Share screens.
We got a baseball catcher. I can see that.
It's not me. Okay, try this again.
Oh, that's my son.
All right, how about now?
Yeah, that worked.
See a bunch of numbers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, right over here, average profits. Buying S&P futures, end of day, May 7th or the next business day, exiting May 12th, risking 3%, gives me an average percent gain of 1.41% right over here. So I can give you that as my probability of a target. See that?
Yep.
Here, let me show you what else I can do that's very cool. I can go to the entire history of this trade, so you should see something about now. Every single trade, every year, all the way back to the start of S&P. Do you see that?
We keep going between the all-star catcher and your screen.
That's actually a paintball.
It's a paintball. Okay.
Maybe Mark can stop his screen sharing. Maybe that's what it is.
I can stop mine.
Yeah, stop yours.
Hold on one sec. Let me go to the halt. I'm going to go to cancel my screen share. Okay, hopefully that stopped it.
What do you see now, guys?
Yeah, we can see your screen now.
Okay, every trade, every year, according to this strategy, I want you to look at the equity curve. There's the equity curve, and here's the performance last year. So last year, this strategy turned in its largest profit in history. So like I say, I'm a numbers guy. Yeah. Last year, we made a total of 60 S&P points in futures in a matter of about 5 days. So that's what our upside possibility is in terms of percentage right over here. Percent average profit, 1.41. Okay.
So, you know, the people who are listening now, they should understand that some of your work has a large amount of it has to do with seasonality and the research that you've done that shows that on a probability basis, during certain periods of year, certain times of the year, certain things have occurred in the past.
Correct.
And basically, obviously it's no guarantee of the future, but you're working with a lot of statistical evidence to make you feel good about the call.
Absolutely right on target. Absolutely.
I got you. So I'm just trying to put it into layman's language so people understand. Basically, at the end of the day, you're doing a lot of work on the historical patterns and the historical numbers and trying to find things that have occurred in the past and obviously hope that they occur in the future, that kind of thing.
That's it. That's what trading's all about, isn't it?
Yep. And then Mark is giving us very much an input. This is why I had said in the beginning of the broadcast, people listening right now have got a lot of value here from the standpoint of what? You got one guy who's crunching numbers on seasonality and on pattern recognitions, and the other gentleman is giving you a lot of good information on momentum and trying to quantify the momentum. Right. And those two things are very valuable, and when they coincide, they'd be very valuable as well.
Good mix.
It's a very good mix. Okay, so the third question here is having to do with your answer, your specifics, but I think we went over some of that already. People who responded to the question, they were looking at things like better earnings, but that's not your guys' cup of tea as much. Momentum, of course, the trend. I guess realistically, the market obviously is making new highs, so it looks like it wants to go higher. I mean, at the end of the day. I was wondering, do you guys do anything with different sectors? People might have different positions in financials or in tech or in industrials or consumer discretionary or whatever. Do you do any sector work?
I do not.
Yeah. And Mark, are you looking at any particular sectors?
For my options, I do.
Okay. Do you have any sectors that seem like they've run their course? Do you have any sectors that look like they might be just emerging? Do you have any information? In other words, a lot of people right now think the financials might be breaking out. A lot of people were getting very bullish on energy for a while. Do you see a lot of people obviously are always bullish on tech? Is there anything you're seeing in any particular sector that might be of value for your input to the people that are listening?
Sure. Well, I'm pretty bullish right now on energy. I'm not sure what sector this falls in, but I like the small fast food chains.
Okay.
Like right now I'm holding Dunkin' Donuts, mm-hmm. and I have a position on Starbucks. They're both vertical spreads for that expire in June. Also some of the pharmaceutical companies. And I'll tell you something that I've been doing lately that I've found really lucrative. I thought that's been very successful. What I do is I've been looking at small biotechs that are approaching their FDA approval date for a phase two medicine. And I'm watching three of those. And I've been really successful in determining which ones are going to get approved and which ones are not going to get approved. And the information's really all on the internet. You just got to do a little bit of reading. But I have, three small biotechs. So in terms of just generalized sectors, though, I like energy, and I like some of the big pharmaceuticals like Abbott, and I also like I'm being redundant. The energy specific pharmaceuticals and the food chains.
Yeah,
let me answer that question.
Sure, Jake. What do you see?
Since I'm basically a futures trader.
Right.
I look at sectors in terms of commodities. Example, right. We know that right now, using what's called the Commitment of Traders report, which comes out every week, in lumber futures, you've got huge commercial buying. Who are these commercials? Home builders, Home Depot, big lumber retailers are buying lumber. They wouldn't be buying lumber futures and taking delivery if they didn't think the price was going to go up. So that immediately tells me the housing sector is going to be big. And that's how I do my research.
And that would be very helpful to a stock person, because then things like Pulte, Lennar, and
or XHB. And,
those would be companies that might benefit again from your insight into the lumber situation.
Right, and they've correlated almost one to one.
I'm going to get to you with another couple of questions on the commodity sector in a second, Jake, but I did want to throw it over to Mark because I had something personally that I thought looked like a fantastic selling opportunity, and it's in the fast food chain. So he mentioned it, so I'm going to follow it up. I've been looking at Chipotle, and it went up into this 700 range, and I'm noticing that the 200-day moving average is at 522. That's about a 40% pop over the 200-day average. My feeling, my opinion, is that's when you start investigating where a chart formation might be forming to go down and fill in that gap. Because my opinion is historically that I've seen when any company gets that far away from its moving average, something occurs to pull it back in. Now we're at 673 on Chipotle today, certainly nowhere into the 720 high. Do you see anything in Chipotle that would indicate that we could have a significant pullback into the 500s?
Actually, no, I've been watching Chipotle and I just wanted to add something to what my colleague said. I have been I watch Options Monster and I watch Benzinga every day for all of the large options trades that cross. And there have been enormous call positions placed on lumber liquidators.
Oh, okay.
And it just falls right into line with what he said about about lumber futures and all of, you know, and home building. And I've been really seriously considering taking a bullish options position on lumber liquidators. And in following up with your question, there have been a large number of traders looking at puts on Chipotle. I could go into Benzinga and find them, but I look for, you know, like a large commitment of traders, you know, a whole bunch of traders that place big orders that are much bigger than open interest. And there have been a lot of traders buying puts on Chipotle. So I could go back and research those levels for you and email them to you. But I agree with you. I think Chipotle has some significant downside to it. And I would not get into it long right now. And if anything, I would take a put position, a bearish position on Chipotle.
I don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen, but that setup worked pretty good with Amazon when it was at 2050 and its moving average was 1500. It worked pretty good with Boeing when it was at 450, 460, and the moving average was at 350. So it has some history, and of course, that small universe is not enough to make any big statement. But it just is a time where that setup is time when I'd start investigating if there's a pattern, like Jake is talking about, that would justify taking some shot at it. Let's go over to Jake, though, because I think
if I could just add one more thing. What sure. I really like to do on options is I like to follow, you know, it's sort of a cliche, but I like to follow the footprint of big money.
Right.
There are a lot of traders out there placing really large options trades, much bigger than open interest. And you see it repeatedly over and over and over again.
Right.
It's something to really examine carefully, because normally that large number of traders with that size money is usually not wrong. They can be, sure. But it's a nice, you know, it's breadcrumbs to follow that I think are definitely worthwhile looking at.
All right. One thing I think we've established here today is that Jake is going to be focusing on the futures, but that doesn't mean a guy who's in the stock market can't find value there, because there's stocks that are involved in the futures as well in all the sectors. So obviously that would be a value if you knew that a certain sector in the commodities was going to get nailed, let's say, or go way through the roof, like the gold metal or something. There's obviously corresponding stocks that it might be valuable to know what the underlying commodity is going to be doing. Jake, I want to get into this with you now, because I think there's a lot of value if you can share with this. There's a few different sectors on commodities that I think are, you know, fairly, you know, shall we say, well followed. Grains, gold, oil, and treasuries.
Yep.
Anyway, we could get a quick synopsis seasonally.
Sure.
You know, we're going to be into May, and they got this trade deal they're talking about, and they're going to be helping the farmer. Is there an opportunity emerging in grains, or is this hot air that's going to turn into just stale air?
It's an incredibly huge opportunity. Let me tell you what's happening. Commercials are buying corn, wheat, soybeans, oats, soybean oil, and soybean meal. Who are these commercials? Archer Daniels Midland, Bunge Grain, The Andersons. These guys are buying the stuff while the farmer is unloading. So it's typical the farmer's getting screwed and the big trader is going to make the money. So they buy these grains up at cheap prices. You can see that on the Commitment of Traders report. They store them, and then as prices go up, they begin to unload them. So you've got huge opportunities. Now, all we have to do is wait for timing to buy Archer Daniels Midland, Bunge Grain, The Andersons, and any other company that's
Mosaic,
involved.
Maybe Mosaic.
Mosaic, or an ETF that's a grain ETF, like a DBA.
Right.
So that's where the opportunities are.
What timetable are you looking at as far as, because, you know, you are a seasonal guy. What months do you think that we may see increased activity in these grains? Because we're going to be hitting May. You know?
It could be any day now. It's just a day-to-day thing. But once it happens, it's going to take about 6 months for it to reach its top. It's going to be a big move, and it's going to be intermediate term.
Here's another thing that happened years ago, Jake, that many people may not know, but you would know. The elevator operators, I guess the guys who store the stuff, they short it. And then a number of years back, the market got squeezed to where all these guys that were short, I think they were elevator operators, they had to scramble to cover. Is the short interest in these grains tremendous now? And could there be a squeeze potential possibly if prices changed after they got a deal with China?
It's highly unlikely because they got the inside line on the information that's going to happen before it happens.
Okay.
Highly unlikely. But what could happen is this. Well, let me give you an example. Why is Starbucks so much higher today than it was 2 years ago? Easy. Price of coffee has been coming down.
Right.
Price of sugar has been coming down. Price of cocoa has been coming down. Price of milk has been getting killed.
Right.
All this time, they've been buying, hedging their needs for these commodities. Right. In the meantime, on the retail level, they're not lowering the price. So they come and they say, we've got to raise cocoa prices because the price of cocoa is going up. Never mind the fact that they bought it 2 years ago dirt cheap.
Right.
So that's how we take this kind of information and turn it into a long-term investment.
Right. That makes sense. How about quickly going around the horn, just briefly on the gold, oil, and treasury. Do you have any comments on that area?
Commercials have been buying short-term interest rate futures, which means we look for lower interest rates over the short period of time. Mm-hmm. In terms of some of the others like gold, silver, they've been buying gold. And but the biggest one of them is copper. Southern Peru Copper, BHP, Rio Tinto, COPX, the copper ETF, all great buys right now for the intermediate to long term, not short term, intermediate term, because commercials are buying copper like crazy. And we're talking about China. So all this stuff about China's not buying commodities anymore, it's all bullshit. It's not true.
And on the oil, because a lot of people are getting into the oil stocks, and, you know, we saw with Exxon last week, sometimes that doesn't work out so well, and Chevron doesn't exactly look like it's going through the roof right now either. Does oil look like it has a chance of going to 70, 80, or do you think this 67 area might be about it for a while?
It's too late. That news has already happened.
So it does look like
we've made the big move. They bought before the big move, and it's too late now. But you might want to look at natural gas.
Nat gas may have an opportunity?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, this is the value, I think, that you would bring to the listener from the standpoint of, obviously, it's hard for everybody to trade everything or follow everything. And so the information you could bring to the table to work into their game plan as far as what the underlying commodities are doing versus the stocks, it could be very helpful to both stock and future traders.
David, did I say a word I wasn't supposed to say before?
What was that?
Bullshit.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Okay.
All right, let's go and hit number four. Question number four, what procedures do you monitor, Mark, and evaluate your trading results and progress over time? So how do you give yourself a report card?
What I really do is I keep a spreadsheet of all of my trades, my stocks, my options, my day trading. I think it's really important to go back and evaluate every trade, especially the shorter term trades. It's because sometimes you can make a lot of money on a bad trade and you can lose money on a perfect trade. So I think the important thing to do is to look at all the independent variables that you assess in taking a trade, make sure that they're all there. And the only way to do that is to sit down with your trades and evaluate them based on all of the variables that you look at. I don't think, actually, whether they make money or they lose money is really the most, obviously it's incredibly important, but if you want to learn to become a better trader, you have to look at whether or not you took a great trade that made money and stood aside on a bad trade that wound up maturing into a loser. That's the way I think I assess my trades.
Okay. And Jake, what's your input on how do you keep track of things and see that you're staying on the road?
Mark, I don't know if we've ever talked before, but I think you're absolutely brilliant in what you do. Everything is numbers here. I differentiate between a smart loss and a stupid loss. A smart loss: I lost money by following the rules. Stupid loss: I lost money because I did something stupid. I didn't follow the rules. Differentiate between a smart profit: I made money because I did the rules properly, or a stupid profit: I made money because of sheer dumb luck. So everything is computerized. We know why we made the trade. We know the entry, the exit, the strategy. We differentiate between did we follow the rules or not. But since everything's computerized, 98% of the time we're following the rules. And that's how we track performance.
Okay. And I think it's obviously important to track it. And of course, managing your bankroll on anything is always the best thing to do. In other words, you're going to risk a certain amount on each trade. And obviously, you're going to try to get some kind of winning trades going. But, you know, managing how much risk you take on each trade is obviously a big important thing as well.
Of course, and when my wife calls me and says, put money in the bank, if the money's there, I'm happy.
That's right. You know, I'm going to throw out a few things that I'm watching just to get a little reaction to this. We're making new highs on the S&P, the NASDAQ, and everyone's talking about how wonderful everything is. But, you know, I looked at the GDP report, and if you, you know, peel back the onion, it was a big inventory and export, you know, report. Consumer spending, which is two-thirds of economic growth, is actually declining, as well as capital spending. You know, so that's not a great report. And basically, there's two things that I've been watching in the last number of years that have been giving me a little bit of a clue on are we real or not real and where we're going. And that's the transports and the Russell. And I noticed that the transports are rolling over a bit after it peaked above 11,000. I can see it's about 800 points away from its all-time high, which is a pretty good amount of number. And the Russell is, you know, in the 1600 area, its all-time high is 1742. So these two guys are nowhere near banging on those doors right this second. And obviously the consensus is that, you know, the market looks great and it's going to go higher. Now, there's no pattern because you're making new highs that might tell you it might roll over. But do these two things, Mark, indicate that we may not be as robust as we think, and that the gasoline tank may be closer to E than F?
Absolutely correct. You know, I have the same numbers that you do. Consumer spending was off, and a lot of that big GDP, a lot of that really fat GDP number was due to companies creating a significant amount of inventory. That would certainly give me pause and concern about the upcoming quarter. But it still wouldn't change my attitude regarding the market. As you know, as long as market breadth is this strong, as long as we're making sequential higher highs and higher lows, I would not step in front of a freight train and try to short the market. You could step aside at some point. There's nothing wrong with that. And I just want to say one thing that I think is an investment killer, and that is, you know, FOMO, fear of missing out. And what that does is it decimates traders' capital. I mean, you know, they're so scared they're going to miss out on that last 2 or 3% move on the S&P that they're going to get in, and they're going to wind up getting in at the top. I think if you get concerned, you stand aside. There's nothing wrong with missing out on a couple of percentage points move higher. Don't chase anything. And I think that what you mentioned is absolutely true. Those are two key elements that could show that maybe the market is topping out. Maybe it's going to roll. Maybe the GDP numbers are going to be very disappointing next quarter. But in terms of what I would do if I had a certain amount of money to commit, I would commit it to the long side on the S&P right now.
Yeah, there's no, what we're saying here is that there could be some caution flags, but there's no pattern right now, or no momentum, or no indicators that it's rolling over. But if it did come up to start showing you some indicators, you certainly wouldn't dismiss them as, you know, as not relevant.
No. I would take them as extremely relevant, and maybe as a sign that, you know, I'll stand aside since, you know, I don't have fear of missing out. If the market continues to go up and I miss, you know, for even, you know, even a big percentage move, if I have any concern, I would rather stand aside and miss a winner than jump in and wind up getting slapped in the face and grab a loser.
Now, Jake, you're doing a lot of technical analysis and historical analysis. Do you want to do anything with the Elliott Wave? Because some people that I've been reading and listening to, you know, they are thinking between here and 3100 would be a region where the market may, you know, go into that region. And then if patterns emerge, you know, that would indicate that the market is exhausted, that might be a region to either hedge your position using collars or married puts, replace your positions using limited risk calls rather than a fully paid position, or, you know, just doing something to reduce risk somewhere between here and 3100. Do you do any analysis or heard of any or see any that has any merit there?
Here's my problem with the Elliott Wave.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful concept. It's got great sex appeal. Bob Rector, brilliant analyst of the Elliott Wave, great artist when it comes to figuring it out. In fact, he quotes some of my sentiment work in his usually in his newsletters. The problem is this. Teach 10 people the Elliott Wave, give them a chart, put them each individually in a room and say, what do you think? You come up with six different answers. So for me, that's a no-starter.
Right.
In terms of what you said, the transports should be leading the way. They're not doing that. The response to the GDP report, as good as it was or seemed to be, was kind of muted. So for me, market response to a report is much more important than what the report says itself. We're vulnerable right now to a correction, the kind of correction that scares a lot of small people out of the market. So I think it's wise to take some money off the table, which, you know, we've been bullish stocks for 5 years. I've been advising people to take some money off the table, get ready to buy when we get the reaction down. It's going to happen. It's going to be fast and furious. It's going to leave a lot of people scared. And then it's going to turn around just like it did a couple of months ago. So watch for the reaction, get ready to buy, because this bull market ain't over yet.
No, the moving averages, which are based on price and time, are constructive. Albeit they're a little bit underneath the market where it's trading right now.
Right.
With regards to anything else that you guys are seeing on your radar that you'd like to share, as far as you know, the timeliness of something or something you believe.
Let me share platinum. Okay.
Oh yeah, sure.
I realize it's a little obscure.
Yeah, you're bringing that up, I'd like to just see, because I've been familiar with this for a long time. Obviously, there's something a little bit strange where platinum is trading under gold, because anybody who's been in the markets for a long time knows that generally is the direct opposite. It trades at a significant premium, and the discount has been around the $400 range, give or minus $50, and that seems to me to be a fairly significant discount. Could you explain to the people
You are right on it. Platinum used to trade at $1,500 premium to gold.
Exactly.
That premium has collapsed over the last few years to the point where, as you just said, the discount's been $450. So the best value in the metals right now is platinum. I'm not saying buy platinum, sell gold as a spread, but I am saying if you want to own precious metals, your biggest bang for the buck is going to be buying platinum in a greater ratio than gold. So if you want to own some gold, own twice as much platinum, because it's going to make a big move. And that move is happening. It's already, and in fact, it's already started. As you've seen gold go down for the last couple of weeks, platinum has been going up.
So the spread's collapsing a little bit.
Yes, it is. And there's a couple of platinum ETFs that you can take advantage of as well.
Yeah. Can you give a little idea on why that phenomenon occurred? I mean, how did we go from a $1,500 premium to a $500 almost discount? I mean, what's the reasoning behind it? What occurred?
As far as I know, there was a lot of dumping of platinum by miners who didn't really see the demand that they saw, because it's a strategic type metal and used in catalytic converters. If you've got electric cars, you don't need a catalytic converter.
That makes sense. Okay, so the use of it went out the window a little bit, and ergo the demand, and there you go.
Exactly.
You know, this fast and furious decline, Mark, that may or may not occur at some point, you know, sometimes people don't understand that, or they forget that there's liquidity situations. In other words, when we're going down at 2350 in December to the S&P, and the entire planet is selling out of everything, you know, somebody's got to be on the buy side. And the guys on the buy side can see the volume is just ridiculous, so they drop the bid as low as possible. And then now they can see the volume is totally coming in on the buy side, as you've said, with the breadth. And obviously, they're raising their offer as high as they can. And the idea there is they're going to raise the offer until the volume dries up. And one thing I've noticed about many stocks is their 50-day moving average on volume is far less than their 200-day moving average on volume. So that's de facto evidence that the volume is drying up a little bit on some of the stocks, right?
No, I absolutely agree. And, you know, I do think there are a lot of warning signs. And like I said, and really, and, you know, as Jake alluded to, it's not a bad idea to, if you're sitting on profit, to take some money off the table, or if at this point you're thinking of just getting in now, to stand aside and not have fear of missing out. And I just wanted to follow up with two comments that Jake made about Elliott Wave. And I wanted to expand on that also to GAN theory and to Fibonacci. They all have been around forever. They've been around a long time, and they are very sexy. Like they just, I don't know. There's just as people are drawn to them. But the problem with them is this. Each financial market is a closed system, and it works just like the law of thermodynamics. And certain forces are brought to bear on that closed system. But one of the things that's extremely important about looking at a particular type of intrinsic pattern or wave, like Elliott Wave does and GAN theory, again, is that every buyer is essentially equal in power to every seller. And to put it another way, if you look at Japanese candlestick patterns, well, I think they're important, but 400 years ago, Japanese rice traders invented them when the power of every buyer was equal to the power of every seller. Now, what happens to a closed system when, you know, a computer goes on and a machine-generated trade is, you know, generated by a large institution that drives crude oil up 75 ticks? It destroys that intrinsic pattern. I think that trading anything like that is very, very dangerous. I don't think there's much predictive value anymore in Elliott Wave, GAN theory, or Fibonacci because of all that big money.
I think, at the end of the day, human nature wants to have Notre Dame as their broker, a guy who saw tomorrow. In reality, the best you can do on this stuff is try to do some effective probability analysis. And that's about as good as it gets.
You know, that show Ancient Aliens on cable has made a lot of money.
Yeah.
people want to believe that stuff. As long as people want to believe stuff, it's going to continue to work for a while. But I need complete objectivity, and that's the best lesson I've learned in 50 years of trading is if you can test it and you can get results, you can trade it. If you can't test it, if it's not objective, it ain't going to work for me. There are a lot of people out there that are brilliant artists when it comes to Fibonacci and Elliott Wave and GAN. Fine, let them do it, but it's not for me.
Yeah. And, like I say, everything has some value. It's just, it's all about probabilities and then outcomes. Jake, we're going into the
hey
string
guys,
here.
Yep. Just a quick thing. We had a question from the live audience.
Oh, sure.
Where do you see Colgate, CL? Where do you guys see that going?
I have no opinion.
Are you following it at all, Mark? Because obviously today it's at around 71.25. It's been as high as about 71.52. And it has had a pretty good size run here. So I'm sure somebody who's in it would like to have an idea if it's going to keep going.
No, go ahead.
Well, just saying, the 50-day moving average is 67 bucks and the 200 days 64 and it's trading at 71. And the volume is about 3.3 million on a 50-day, 4 million on a 200-day. So it's had a pretty good run from 60 to 70. Do you see anything out there on your screen, Mark, that would give them an idea of what do you think?
Well, Colgate just took a nice gap up. And now it's sort of consolidating. If I had to pick based on the technicals, I'd say it's going to take another leg up. I mean, it's making sequential higher highs and sequential higher lows, and it looks to me like it's in nice bull mode. Now, again, based on a lot of the fundamental, a lot of the things that we use, it is extended. But if I was going to take a position in Colgate, I would go along with it.
I like it.
Yeah.
I do have an opinion out of that. Looked at the chart, okay. It's got a beautiful uptrend. There is no negative divergence in terms of the quality of the stock. It's good quality. And in terms of paying a dividend, it's paying about 1.69%. The yield's about 2.3%, which ain't that bad. So I am positive on the stock. Looks like it's higher. It's going to go higher.
And
okay. Apparently, I misunderstood him. He actually was referring to the crude oil futures. So,
on crude oil, Jake. Yeah. Since you follow the commodities so close, you want to give him an idea on current view on that?
We were long crude oil until about 4 days ago. We got a trigger on the top. It's triggered a sell, and it's down now, and the trend is down now, is now down.
Yeah, I guess Trump made a call over to the Saudis, and after he came out, and he said, I called, or somebody was saying about Trump asked for lower prices, and I guess he has that ability over people, who knows. But anyway, after they did that, that's when it started to fade out a little bit. And there's a little tension over there, obviously, with Iran and, what might happen over there. So it could be volatile, but we'll have to see what happens there.
Can I ask Jake a quick question?
Sure.
What do you see for cobalt and zinc?
I'm not knowledgeable enough about those two. I could certainly do some research and put it through the computer and give you an opinion on that.
Okay.
So you can send me an email or whatever. We can talk because I do have a lot of data on that, which I can run through the computer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, most of the things you're looking at, Jake, are listed on the exchanges in Chicago, correct?
Or New York or London.
Or London, right. Okay. So anyway, as I was, before we were going into Colgate and crude oil, I was going to ask Jake, as we're going into the summer here, spring and summer, we got the planting season coming up and we've got the harvest and the growing season. And we have a trade deal that might be one way or another. So would you suggest that the potential in the grains this summer would be one of the better sectors in the commodities to kind of keep an eye on?
Yeah, they're way overdue for a turnaround to the upside.
Yeah.
But one thing you do want to start watching in the summer is heating oil, believe it or not.
I got you.
Because that's
the old Bernard Baru idea, buy your straw hats in the summer?
That's right. You got it. Absolutely right.
All right. Mark, anything of a specific nature in our market, a stock or anything else like you might be kind of thinking is pretty exciting right now?
Let me take a quick look here.
And maybe you could share a chart.
And let me say one thing while Mark's looking. I believe it or not, I like the marijuana stocks.
Oh, yeah. As an investment.
As an investment. Cronus is a good one.
Yeah, well, it seems like there's also some consolidation and activity going on in there as well. While he's pulling up the chart, any question, any idea on Bitcoin, Jake?
You know, I'm an old-fashioned guy. I just can't relate to Bitcoin. But let me say this. Bitcoin and all the others, Ethereum and all the others, have been following the technical analysis rules beautifully.
Right.
And so in terms of trading them based on the technical analysis, it's great. My son works for a major cryptocurrency company, and he's really into it, but it's just not my type of market.
Right.
If I could share my chart, I just have, both of these stocks are a little bit off the beaten path, but they may interest some of your listeners. And I'm just going to share my chart again. Now I'm on Thinkorswim. And the first one I wanted to show you is a really small cap that I think has tremendous potential to the upside. It's called Auris Medical. It's a penny stock, but I've done an enormous amount of research on it. And just be very, very brief. They have the first ear device that ablates motion sickness. And motion sickness is a big problem in a lot of people who travel, a lot of people who have to work on water. Right now, the alternatives are really poor. There's Dramamine.
I'd rather walk on water.
Yeah, right. Walk on water. And it's just, it's very poor. The information that they've given to the FDA, I think they're going to very soon get FDA approval for that device. And I think that stock is going to really, really, it's a penny, and this is obviously not a blue chip that pays dividends. There's risk involved, but I think it's one that has a really nice chance of returning a lot of money on investment. And the other one that I'm looking at that's a little bit more it's speculative, but I want to throw it out there, and it's WWE, Worldwide Wrestling Federation. And the reason I really like it, and the reason I see it as a long-term potential $125 to $150 stock is I believe that its new XFL football team or football league is going to be successful. I believe Vince McMahon made a huge mistake once. I don't believe he's going to make that same mistake again. I don't have a terrific entry here, and my hold time would be long. I mean, you're looking at, this is not a buy and sell. This is a hold for about a year. But I think that WWE, if it is successful, and I believe that league will be, this stock is going to rocket. And I've seen traders taking huge call positions out into 2020 on the WWE. So those are just two off the beaten path stocks that you may want to take a look at that I believe have really nice
stories behind them. Yeah.
Potential.
Right.
Can I share a story? Do you have a minute to share a story?
Yeah, we got a minute.
You know, I live in California where pot's legal, and I was never believing. The last time I smoked pot was 1967, so to give you an idea. But I've been having some back pain, and so somebody said, well, why don't you try some of the CBD oil? I have to say, I was very skeptical, but it's an absolute miracle. Hmm. The pain went away, has stayed away. I sleep better at night. And so now I'm a regular at the pot shop. But I think these stocks have great potential on the upside.
Yeah, these stocks and many of the stocks that we've talked about, you know, their valuations obviously are very difficult to put your arms around.
True.
So you're basically buying into a concept, you know what I mean? Like with wrestling, the one he was talking about and the pot stocks, you know, very difficult to wrap your arms around valuation. But if the story works out, then as you know from valuations in Amazon and valuations in Netflix and the things like that, you know, valuations get thrown out the window if they have something that people really want and if the thing really works.
Right.
And then, of course, they grow into their valuation over time. So, that's the theory. That's the possibility.
Right. Yeah. And they're following the technical patterns very carefully, very, very successfully. So that's something you might want to look at.
All right. I think this was a fabulous show because there was a lot of information shared and a lot of things talked about that I think are fairly timely. So I'm real happy that I was the moderator today. With regards to the final roundup, Mark, let people know how they can get a hold of you and if there's anything special that you're offering today.
I'm at www.rightlinetrading.com. You can send me an email at info@rightlinetrading.com. We have a few things that have a significant discount that are running this week. Our software, our trade execution platform. If you're interested, you're welcome to give us a call. You know, we base our entries purely on technical analysis. There's, you know, no fundamentals for our day trading and our swing trade. And options trades, you know, are all really based off of following the footprint of big money. I look at who's buying what, and if I like it, you know, that's where I go.
Okay. All right, Jake, how can people get a hold of you and anything you want to offer out here today?
Go to my website, trade-futures.com. I've got a lot of stuff over there, but if you want to get my newsletter, which I put out once a week, it's an audio video newsletter, comes out on Sundays, and it gives you the projections for the next week as well as a complete technical analysis according to my work. I'll give you that 4 weeks for free. Just write me jake@trade-futures.com. I got nothing to sell you.
Okay. All right. It was really great to be with you. I'm Jim Kenny. OptionProfessor.com is my website, OptionProfessor.com. We got a podcast every week that we update all the markets and also work on how to use the options as a hedge, meaning replacement trades on your long positions from time to time to reduce your cash risk, and using collars and married puts from time to time to protect your gains. Again, it's been great to be with you guys today. Great broadcast. And back to you, David. You can close it up.
All right. Thanks, guys. Just a quick reminder to everyone watching, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or show archives. And thanks to Seth for the live question we talked about today. Be sure to join us tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern time, for Analyze Your Trade. Let's see, Neil Batho, Brian Klindworth, and Mike Pastani will be on that episode. And I just want to thank my guest again for this week.
Thanks, everyone. Pleasure to meet you guys.
Yeah, Jake Bernstein of TradeFutures.com. Thanks for being here for the first time.
Trade-Futures.com.
Yeah, Trade-Futures. Mark Sachs of RightLineTrading.com and Jim Kenny of OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It was a lot.